This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Sarah Koenig, is the executive producer and host of Serial, the most popular podcast in the history of podcasts. It isn't just popular. It became a phenomenon. It's a spinoff of This American Life, where Sarah was a producer. The 12-episode-long season one ended last week, leaving a void in the lives of listeners who waited each week in anticipation of the next installment. Serial is Sarah's reinvestigation of the murder of a Maryland high school student, Hay Min Lee, who was strangled to death in 1999. Her body was discovered buried in a park. Her schoolmate and ex-boyfriend, Adnan Syed, was convicted of the murder and is serving a life sentence. Nearly 16 years later, he continues to maintain his innocence. His conviction was based on testimony from his schoolmate, Jay, who said Adnan asked for his help after committing the murder. Here's Jay responding to a police detective's questions after the body was found. Jay has just told the detective that he picked up Adnan after the murder, then they got some shovels, drove to the park, where Adnan proceeded to bury Hay.
He asked me if I was going to help, and I told him, and he starts just shoveling dirt on top of him. We leave there.
Let me stop a minute.
Yes.
You helped him dig the hole.
Yes.
How long did it take you both to dig the hole?
20-25 minutes.
How deep did you make the hole?
Oh, maybe 6 inches at the most. It wasn't very deep at all.
Who did most of the digging?
It was
both of you.
Yeah.
Equal work.
I wouldn't say that, but yeah.
Okay.
So those are the key points. Adnan told Jay in advance he was going to do it. He did it. They buried her. Jay's story wasn't just the foundation of the state's case against Adnan. It was the state's case against Adnan. And the picture Jay drew, it's cold. I mean, he's not describing a crime of passion here. This is something much darker. To methodically map out the death of your friend, to strangle her with your own hands, so close up like that. That would mean Adnan wasn't just a killer, but a master liar and manipulator. A psychopath, probably.
But Sarah finds no evidence that Adnan is a psychopath. This gives you some idea of what makes Serial so gripping. You hear actual detective interviews and audio excerpts of the trial, along with many new interviews Sarah conducted, including with Adnan, who spoke to her frequently by phone from prison, and was adamant he did not kill Hay.
No one can ever come with any type of proof or anecdote or anything to ever say that I was ever mad at her, that I was ever angry with her, that I ever threatened her. You know, that's the only thing I can really hold on to. That is like my only firm handhold in this whole thing is that no one's ever been able to prove it. No one ever has been able to provide any shred of evidence that it had anything but friendship towards her, like love and respect for her. That's at the end of the day, man. The only thing I can ever say is, man, I had no reason to kill her.
Sarah guides us through the story, reporting new information she uncovers that apparently neither the defense nor prosecution seem to have been aware of. Information that keeps upending her own assumptions about the case and Adnan's guilt or innocence. In the process, we learn things about the criminal justice system that we, or at least I, didn't know. And through Sarah, we reflect on the nature of reasonable doubt. And questions like, how can you really know if someone like Adnan, who is popular, smart, and articulate, is capable of murder? Since Sarah raised so many doubts about Adnan's guilt, and since it was such a messy case, listeners caught up in the whodunit aspect of the story speculated somewhat obsessively about what conclusion she would reach. What kept me listening through all 12 episodes wasn't just the case. It was Sarah's and her team's extraordinary reporting and storytelling. Sarah Koenig, welcome to Fresh Air, and congratulations on Serial. It's really just an extraordinary series. So radio has a bigger audience than podcasts do. Nobody expected Serial to have this phenomenal audience that it's attracted. And why do the podcast about a murder, and more specifically about this murder? On the face of it, the murder that you chose to reinvestigate is kind of like your typical case where, you know, maybe the person was wrongfully convicted. My guess is that there's a lot of cases like that. This wasn't a celebrated case. It was a case is from 1999. It's a long time ago. So of all the stories in the world that you could have devoted a year of reporting on, why did you choose this one?
This woman had come to me, Rabia Chowdhury had come to me 2 summers ago now, you know, contacted me. She didn't know me, just, you know, had found my name in the Baltimore Sun clips and said, you know, could you take a look? I started to look into it just kind of slowly. In other words, it's not like I went out looking for a problematic murder case at all. This came to me. I started looking into it, and I became very interested in it pretty quickly. And I started reporting it just sort of in between other things for This American Life, for the radio show. And so I was that reporting was already underway. And then sort of simultaneously with that, Julie Snyder and I had started talking about, like, what's some other thing we could do, some other podcast, some other radio show, some project, and we eventually sort of settled on this idea of a serial, which is what I had wanted to do. So what story would we do first? There were a few ideas that popped up, and, you know, I said, well, I got this one I'm already working on. It seems like it's complicated. It seems like it's held my interest in big ways over these many weeks and months. I'd already been working on it. So we sort of thought, okay, let's do it.
Adnan, who's serving the life sentence for murder, says to you at some point, he's not sure if you're his savior or his executioner. Did you want to be seen as either? And what did you do to try to make it clear that you're a reporter and neither a savior nor executioner?
I think that the way that I dealt with it with Adnan and with his family and his advocates, you know, being as upfront with them as I could from the very start of saying, I don't know where I'm going to end. Like, just so you all, we're all clear, like, I'm not here to exonerate Adnan. I'm here to report this story. And I don't know what I'm going to find. And I might find evidence that he's guilty. And, like, we should all be prepared for that. You know, I mean, like, I've had some form of that conversation with everyone on both sides.
So you have really been shouldering an enormous responsibility to the people whose lives you're investigating by investigating this story of an actual murder. Mm-hmm. Adnan Syed, the person who's serving a life sentence now for a murder he says he didn't commit, he has the most to gain from this because now doubt is being raised in a way that it wasn't even raised at the trial about his guilt. You know, maybe he's really not guilty. But at some point, he tells you the downside of your reporting. And in this excerpt from the next to last episode, you read portions of an 18-page single-space type letter that Adnan sent you from prison. And so part of this is you talking to us, the audience, and part of it is you quoting from the letter. So let's hear this excerpt.
Adnan is obviously aware of this podcast, that it's out in the world. And I could tell that my story had messed with his equilibrium. When he was convicted of murder, he said, the biggest shock for him was that people thought he was capable of this hideous thing, that people didn't believe him. As I look back now, he wrote, I realized there were only 3 things I wanted after I was convicted: to stay close to my family, prove my innocence, and to be seen as a person again, not a monster. That third one, he says he's managed, inside prison. Quote, people in here know me as a stand-up guy. Guards, inmates, staff, people I've been around for 15 years have seen me every day, recognize me as someone whose word can be trusted. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I was able to find the peace of mind in prison that I lost at my trial, unquote. And now I come along, at Robbie's behest, not his, and yank this door open again to the outside world and to all its doubts about Adnan's integrity, stirring up the most painful possible questions about whether he's a monster. It's his nightmare, basically, to be accused of manipulating everyone around him.
So that's an excerpt of Serial. Sarah, were you surprised by that reaction, that there was going to be this downside that he described to you, that people would start thinking, well, maybe he's a monster. People who didn't even know him, who didn't know about the murder, now they know his story, and some of them think he's guilty. Some of them think that he's not. But were you expecting that downside to be expressed?
For him to
for
express
him,
it?
Or yeah, for him, yeah. That now, now people might think I'm a monster again. I thought I'd put that behind me.
Right.
And now these doubts are being raised again.
Yeah. No, I wasn't. I could tell something was affecting him a little bit, I think, before this. So I knew something was up a little bit. And then I got that letter, and it was a little disjointed, which is unlike him, you know. I could tell he was upset. And it was a really long letter. And it's sort of what I was saying earlier, where it was sort of like when I realized how many people were listening and how carefully people were listening. And Adnan had started to get lots of letters from people, you know, from strangers, you know, from some people he knew, but from strangers, you know. And, you know, the guards, some of the guards are listening and talking to him about, I mean, he can't hear it, but the guards are hearing it and talking to him about it. And so I think he just, it overcame him a little bit. And what to me, what was interesting about the letter was what it explained. There's another part in the podcast that happens before this, where he asks me, like, wait, why are you doing this story? This is before it had started to air. And he was like, can you just explain to me again, like, what we're doing and why? And I wasn't totally prepared for that question. And so I sort of explained, you know, my interest and also said, and also just because, like, I started talking to you and like, I like talking to you and you seem like a good guy and stuff. And his reaction was so surprising. Like, it took me aback so much, where he was just like, you don't even know me.
Oh,
like,
we have that clip ready. Let me play that. Let me play that, because I think it would be very dramatic to hear it. So here's Adnan reacting to you telling him that that you think he's a nice guy who isn't the type who would commit a murder.
I mean, you don't even really know me, though, Koenig. You don't. Maybe you do. Maybe. I mean, you know, I don't. We only talk on the phone. I don't understand what you mean. It's just weird to hear you say that, because I don't even really know you.
But wait, are you saying you don't think that I know you at all?
I mean, for you to say that I'm a great person, I mean, like a nice person, you know what I'm saying? I don't, I mean, that. I don't know. Like, I've only talked to you on the phone a few times. I guess you investigated me back then.
Okay, so to prove how much you don't know each other, he calls you Koenig when your name is Koenig. So he doesn't even know how to pronounce your name. But
right. But
he kind of proves a point in that you make throughout Serial, which is it's hard to judge a person and whether they're capable of murder based on what you know of them. People are surprising, especially if you don't know somebody well and you didn't know him that well.
So can I just sort of connect this back to the thing I was saying before about the letter?
Yeah.
So I was really taken aback when he said that, and you can hear me sort of laugh for a second, which is totally nervous laughter on my part, where I'm just like, what's happening, you know? And and so when I got the letter, which was months later, you know, after the podcast had started coming, that's when I understood what had happened in that moment that you just played, which is he had made all of this effort. He's so scared of being labeled a manipulator that he felt like he's savvy, he's smart. So he knew that every interaction with me would be viewed as in the same way, not only by me, but by anyone hearing it. So he tried so, so hard to not... to have it just be about the case and just be about what happened and sort of the facts of the case. And he felt like, as long as I stick to the facts of the case, I'm safe, because these are things that are showable and provable one way or the other. So I won't be accused of being a manipulator.
And I should mention here that the judge accused him of being a manipulator. So
yes,
I think he's especially sensitive about that.
And strong terms. Mm-hmm. And so when I said that to him, like, you seem like a nice guy, he was just like, oh, God, you know, here we go again.
Right.
Here we go again. All this has been, is going to end up in the same place where people are just going to say, oh, he manipulated you.
My guest is Sarah Koenig, the executive producer and host of the podcast Serial. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sarah Koenig, the host and executive producer of the podcast Serial, in which she reinvestigates a 1999 murder of a high school student. Her ex-boyfriend, Adnan Syed, was convicted of murder and is serving a life sentence. Serial includes recorded excerpts of Adnan's phone calls to Sarah from prison. So Adnan was not able to hear the podcast in prison. I think he was able to read transcripts. Do I have that right?
Yeah, he's read, I don't know how many transcripts he's read, and I don't totally know who's sending him the transcripts, because we're not, but I think he's read a bunch of them. I don't know how many.
Why can't he listen to the podcast? Is that his choice, or is he not allowed to?
They don't have internet. He doesn't have internet, so...
And no one can, like, download it from the outside and bring it to him?
Well, he has nothing. He has a... what does he have? Xbox? He has like one of those game things for the TV. And apparently you can play like a CD on it. So at one point I said, you know, I can burn them onto CDs for you and send you those. I think he has to get special permission to receive a CD. And he said, yeah, I'll let you know when I get the permission. But he's never done that. And I don't know. I don't know if part of him doesn't want to hear it, that he'd rather read it on the page.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We've argued about that, actually.
About whether he should hear it or not?
Yeah, yeah. Because I'm like, it's meant to be heard. And he's like, no, I want to see it in its purest form on paper. And I'm like, no. You're missing a ton.
Right.
You're missing all kinds of nuance that is happening in people's voices, or mm-hmm. he's taking stuff at face value that I say, that I'm like, no, if you heard the way I say it, you'd hear that it's like in passing, or it's like I'm being ironic or whatever. And he's just like, no, you don't get it. You don't get it that the real version is on paper. Like we had a total, and I was like, you don't understand radio. And he's like, you don't understand science. You know, I don't know. So we've actually argued about that.
You brought in a couple of experts to be consultants on the series. One was a detective, Jim mm-hmm. Tranum, and one was somebody who heads the Innocence Project at the University of Virginia Law School, Deidre Enright. And I learned things from them that I'm not sure I ever would have known this, that for instance, and this is from the Innocence Project, that most people who are wrongfully convicted aren't very helpful in proving their innocence because they weren't there. They don't know what happened. And it's sometimes hard to prove where you actually were. And so the Innocence Project person didn't think that Adnan was going to necessarily be very helpful in helping you prove his innocence if you were trying to prove that.
Right, or just get to the bottom
of it. Or get to the bottom of it.
What did happen that day then? Well, what happened then? What happened, you know? I know that actually surprised me a lot as well, because I mean, but this is a problem, right? There are two ways to think about it in this story, right? Like if Adnan is telling the truth that he didn't do it, well, then of course he doesn't know what happened. And my frustration, and no matter how many ways I try to ask and how many tricks I try to pull out of the hat to like get him off guard or ask in a different way or come at it, you know, like it's never going to help, you know? And then the other way is maybe he's doesn't want to say what, you know what I mean? Like you don't know.
Right. There's something else I learned that I found very interesting. You know, one of the theories about Adnan is that even though he was a good student and he was a good athlete and he was like with the prince of the prom and he's gotten these positive citations in prison for good behavior and all of that, like maybe he's really like a sociopath, but he had this this one moment where that sociopathic self came forward and he committed a murder, and that all of the other good guy stuff, that's just a cover for the sociopathic behavior that's always lurking beneath. Mm-hmm. And so you pose this to, you know, I think it was to the detective who you hired for the series. And he says, there are really so few sociopaths who commit murder and so few murderers who are sociopaths. You should be so lucky that you have that one charming sociopath who's kind of charming, you know, conning you into thinking he's a smart,
that was
normal
actually,
guy.
Yeah, there was that was actually a forensic psychologist named Charles Ewing. So it was not Trainum. It was a different guy. And I think you're sort of collapsing two things. So it was actually Deirdre Enright who said you didn't get that lucky.
Oh, okay.
So Ewing did say like it's not that common, and then Deirdre was like, and you're not that lucky. I know. It's the first place I think like lay people go, including me, of just like maybe he's a psycho, you know, maybe he's a sociopath, and then to realize like, oh, it's not as common as we think in murder cases.
Sarah Koenig will be back in the second half of the show. She's the host and executive producer of the podcast Serial, which is a spinoff of This American Life. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Sarah Koenig, the executive producer and host of the phenomenally popular podcast Serial, which is the first spinoff show of This American Life, where Sarah worked as a producer. The 12-episode-long season one ended last week. The series is the result of a year's reporting reinvestigating the 1999 murder of a Baltimore County high school student, Hay Min Lee. Hay's ex-boyfriend, Adnan Syed, was convicted of the murder but continues to maintain his innocence. It was a very messy case. Adnan's lawyer was later disbarred. Sarah uncovered important facts that were never introduced in court, and she raises many questions about whether Adnan committed the murder. I'm sure part of what was really weighing on you during the time you were reporting the story on Serial was that you had people's lives in your hands. I mean, in some ways, not, you know, like you're discussing Adnan's guilt or innocence. He's serving a life sentence in prison after being convicted of murder. But the person who convicted him, Jay, you really throw a lot of doubt on his story. Jay's story got Adnan convicted because Jay says Adnan called him and said, I'm going to murder my ex-girlfriend, Hay, and asked Jay to help him bury the body. Jay says he did. Jay took the police to where the car was. So I wouldn't want to be Jay right now. You know, like, I wouldn't want to be Jay listening to this podcast because a lot of people think, well, maybe Jay did it and maybe he's just trying to put the blame on Adnan. And I guess I'm wondering what you felt your responsibility to Jay was while reporting the piece.
You know, obviously we thought a lot about that. And I want to be clear, like, we're never saying Jay did it or maybe Jay did it. And I don't believe that. I don't think it's any different from any other story like this where you're reinvestigating a case. You know, it's not sort of groundbreaking in some way that we're sort of bringing up, you know, like, look, there may have been problems with this case. I think we all felt like, it's worth asking these questions. You know, it's worth, these are important questions. And there seem to be problems with this case. And the alternative is to not ask these questions and do nothing. And that didn't seem right. So it just was a matter of, you know, trying as hard as we could to get everyone to participate, including Jay. And you know, I understand why he didn't. I totally understand why he didn't. But that doesn't mean if he doesn't, then we can't do the story. You know, we're going to still do the story because the questions are still there. And so it was just a matter of being as respectful as we could and as accurate as we could. And, you know, we certainly didn't bring up anything that we didn't think was necessary in order to tell this story. We didn't bring up extraneous stuff that seemed like, be like, why? You know, just it was everything that was already there in court, in open court, and in fact, in a harsher way than we were presenting it, frankly. So obviously, I don't want anyone to suffer because of the work I'm doing, But I also feel like, you know, there's a strong tradition of doing these kinds of investigative stories, and we weren't doing anything differently than we would do in any other story.
The young woman who was murdered, the high school student who was murdered, Haemin Lee, is a central part of the story, but her family didn't want to talk with you. Mm-hmm. Because I guess it was, tell us why.
I don't know why. I never spoke to any of them or communicated with any of them. So I don't know why. All I know is that we made efforts on many, many fronts over many, many months. And so, you know, my best guess by the end was like they had to know and chose not to communicate. Her brother, Haemin Lee's brother, did go on Reddit and say, you know, we were contacted and I ignored it or something. And I don't know for sure that that was him, but I'm assuming that it was him. I don't want to presume in any way why not.
One of the things that I forget how her mother says that, but her mother says, was this at the trial? I can't remember. Her mother says that her mother is Korean, from South Korea, and her mother says, and I think I have this right, when a mother is buried, she's buried in the ground. When a child is buried, she's buried in her mother's heart.
Yeah.
We all found that very moving, and I'm sure you did too as a mother.
Of course. I mean, and that's why I didn't want to write anything about it beyond that, is it just felt like it's so private, it's so personal.
Yeah.
It's so overwhelming. And what more can you say? I mean, it's hideous.
Memory is so important in the whole story because in the very first episode, you pointed out how difficult it was how unlikely it was that these high school students would be able to accurately remember where they were 6 weeks ago when they're questioned initially about where they were at the time of the murder. And mm-hmm. you start asking your nephew and some of his friends if they remember what they were doing 6 weeks ago. And either they don't remember or they're contradicting each other. It's clear that their memories about this aren't great.
It really made, like, doing the story really made me think about people's memories and relying on people's memories and how ridiculously tenuous that is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was doing one interview where this guy was in the same class as Adnan and Hay at Woodlawn and was a friend of Adnan's and knew Hay and was in that whole group. And I went to interview him and I wanted him, I knew like one thing I wanted him to tell me about was this one event that had happened at his house where Adnan had come to his house after the whole event had gone down and everything. And he said, he had no memory of that at all, like zero, first of all. And then he said, you know, I just remember like people, the detectives were around, but my parents really shielded me from that. They didn't want me talking to the detective. So I never did an interview. I never did a detective's interview. And I was like, well, okay, so here are the notes from your detective's interview on March whatever, 19, you know, and he just had no memory he'd even spoken to, and he was not lying to me at all. I mean, it was clear, he was just like, what? Oh, really? Oh, let me see that, you know? I mean, he just didn't remember. Like a whole thing that you would think, I don't think he'd ever spoken to a detective before then. I doubt he's spoken to one since, you know? It was like a one of, and he just, it was gone. And so it was just a real reminder of like everything people are telling me is fallible.
My guest is Sarah Koenig, the executive producer and host of the podcast Serial. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sarah Koenig, the host and executive producer of the podcast Serial, in which she reinvestigates the 1999 murder of a high school student. The girl's ex-boyfriend, Adnan Syed, was convicted of murder and is serving a life sentence, but he continues to maintain his innocence. Listeners caught up in the whodunit aspect of the story speculated somewhat obsessively about what conclusion Sarah would reach. The person with the most at stake, Adnan, was wondering too. In the final installment, Adnan offered Sarah some advice about how to end serial.
I was just thinking it the other day. I said, I'm pretty sure she probably has people telling her, like, look, you know this case. He's probably guilty. You're going crazy trying to find out that he's innocent, which you're not going to find because he's guilty. I mean, I don't think you'll ever have 100% or you know what I'm saying, any type of certainty about it. The only person in the whole world who can have that is me. And I mean, for what it's worth, whoever did it, you know, you'll never have that. I don't think you will.
Adnan told me all he wanted was to take the narrative back from the prosecution, just as an exercise, so people could see his case without makeup on, look at it in the eye, up close, and make their own judgments. He told me he doesn't think I should weigh in.
I think you should just go down the middle. I think you shouldn't really take a side. I mean, it's not, you know, obviously, you know what I'm saying, my decision or whatever, obviously it's yours, but I'm saying if I was to be you, just go down the middle. Hey, you know. Obviously, you know how to narrate it, but I checked these things out, and these are the things that look bad against him. These are the things that, you know, the state doesn't really have an answer for. You know what I mean? And I think in a way you could even go point for point. And in a sense, you leave it up to the audience to determine.
While I appreciate Adnan's blessing to take a powder, I'm not going to.
You know, I think there was such a burden on you from the audience who, so many people in the audience were like, what's the ending of Serial going to be? Is she going to say who really did it? Is she going to give us her opinion of who really did it? And some people were like demanding closure, like, I want an ending. I want a satisfying ending. And your responsibility, of course, is to the truth that you were capable of reporting. What kind of burden did you feel about having an ending and what the implications of an ending could be for people who are alive now?
I mean, it's funny. I did not fret about the ending that much. I always just felt like I'm just going to keep my head down and keep reporting and keep reporting and keep reporting, and it'll come to an end, as all stories do. And the reporting's going to take me there. It's like I can't pre-engineer this, right? So it was funny, like, I can't remember when it was, but it was like after maybe episode 3 or 4, we were having a meeting. I was having a meeting with Julie Snyder, the executive producer, and I think Dana was there too, Dana Chivas, who's also a producer. And Ira Glass came in, who's like our boss, you know, and Julie said, oh, Ira says he has some ideas about the ending. And we were like, oh, great, like, let's hear it. So he sort of came in and more or less said, like, so I think it'd be great if you guys, like, solved it. Like, we were like, wait, that's your idea for the, okay, we'll do our best, you know. But so that was a little disconcerting. But, you know, we know how to make stories on This American Life. You know, we've all been doing it for a really long time. And it just felt like we'll get somewhere, and it's not going to please everyone, but that's too, you know, tough luck. I can't, you know what I mean? Like, we couldn't make something that just because people wanted to hear that something.
And I'll say, for people who are still listening to the series and haven't finished yet, we're giving away information about the ending. I don't think that will really ruin anyone's interest in the series, because it's the way you tell the story and how the information unfolds is just so gripping. So in a way, I'd say don't even worry about the spoilers here for those of you who are listening. But now I'm going to mention the conclusion that you do come to. You say, as a juror, I'd have to acquit Adnan Syed as a human being walking down the street next week. What do I think? If you asked me to swear that Adnan Syed is innocent, I couldn't do that. I nurse doubt. And I was really glad you made that distinction between the legal definition of not guilty and the doubts that you have as just a person. And I thought that was a wonderful way to end, because you're kind of, I think, implicitly condemning or at least criticizing the criminal justice system's functioning for this trial, because there are so many reasonable doubts.
Yeah, to me there certainly were. To me there were. And I think we all found that frustrating. You know, all of us who were working on it found it, you know, people are like, what's the most surprising thing, you know, you found out as you went along? Like, a couple of people asked me that. And like, so far my answer has been, you know, this kind of boring thing, like this boring technical thing, but it was so fundamental to me, which is like when we realized that the way that, you know, the star witnesses' testimony was being corroborated, like the main way was with these cell records. And when we realized like the phone records of the day of the crime don't actually support the story that he's telling in any solid way, that to me was like, what? Wait. Whoa. You know, like, with the, and so, yeah, it just, and I felt like that really didn't come through at trial, that the cell records, they were really presented as this bedrock thing that was like this, you know, rock underneath the story that completely held it up. And we just found that that was not true.
Because the case, as you present it, is really gripping. I think a lot of people had the expectations, well, like, wow, what a great murder mystery. Maybe next week we'll find out who did it. Like, right. Let's try to solve the crime. And there were, on social media, there were people trying to solve the crime and everything. But it's not a TV series. It's not a whodunit. It's not a detective novel. It's a real story with real lives on the line here. And you treated it very much as the reporter you are, even though you managed to tell the story in such an engrossing way that we became totally caught up in the plot. But did you ever worry that people were kind of treating it as if it was like CSI or Law and Order and forgetting, no, this is real. These are real people. There can be a lot of pain here in addition to whatever pain was already inflicted.
We worried about that a lot. We worried about it a lot, and we talked about it a lot. You know, we didn't know that was going to happen at all, which, again, our surprise, maybe it was naive, maybe it was short, I don't know. But, you know, I was talking to Julie Snyder about it recently, who's the executive producer, and she was saying this thing of, like, there's this internet world which can get... how to put it politely, like out of control. And you know what I mean? And just throwing stuff around and interacting with this material that's incredibly serious to all of us and that we need to treat with like the utmost professionalism and care, that they're interacting it with it as entertainment. So that was the first thing we weren't totally prepared for, I think. And then just the larger fact that, like, a public radio podcast would intersect with that world, with that internet world of, you know, kind of armchair sleuthers and, I don't know, people who throw out accusations, you know, it just, like, never in our wildest, you know what I mean? Like, it's not the usual combination. And it was worrisome, you know, I mean, I think, and we really just, you know, I fretted a lot about it, about the stuff flying around. And, you know, it was like, we sort of did our best and we still, like, anytime we saw someone's, in, you know, privacy being, invaded, I guess. We would not invade it, but you know what I mean? Like stuff that we were trying to keep, not using people's last names. Whenever we saw another outlet doing that, we always said respectfully, we would love it if you would take that down or, you know, take down these photos, take down the, you know. And sometimes people did it and sometimes they didn't. And we can't, you know, at the end of the day, like we couldn't control it. And it was silly to think that we could control it, but we certainly tried. And, you know, even up to last week, we're still trying when we saw stuff out there to just say, please, you know, can you respect this and that? I mean, sometimes it did feel a little like, oh dear. But we could only do what we could do, you know, and just try to keep it as responsible and respectful as we could all the time, and just hope people followed that lead.
The podcast ended up being so popular that there were parodies of you, including I think a very funny one on Funny or Die. And then Saturday Night Live not only did a parody of you, you were mentioned, Serial was mentioned in Weekend Update. There are these like funny parodies of the story, but you know, the story, again, it's about something really serious and really tragic. A high school girl was murdered 15 years ago, and somebody may be doing time who... Somebody, the person doing time for it, a life sentence, may not be the person who actually committed the murder. That's such serious stuff. I'm not saying it isn't fair game for you know, parodies of the series or anything, but you must be thinking about that too.
Yeah, right. I mean, if I had my druthers, you know, I wish they didn't exist for that reason. But I know it makes me sound like a real, like, fuddy-duddy, party pooper kind of person. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, again, it's like, it's a funny position to be in because, to me, it's incredibly serious. It's not funny in any way. It's not only the subject matter, but it's my integrity as a reporter. I mean, you know, it's serious business to me. And to know that people are, again, interacting with it as entertainment or just making fun of the fact that it's popular is part of it, too. I mean, I think in a way the parody is of the popularity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't not take responsibility for that as well. It's like, well, we brought it into the world, and so... I can't complain with how the world is interacting with it. But if I could choose, you know, I wouldn't have those things happen.
My guest is Sarah Koenig, the executive producer and host of the podcast Serial. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sarah Koenig, the host and executive producer of the podcast Serial, in which she reinvestigates a 1999 murder of a high school student. The girl's ex-boyfriend, Adnan Syed, was convicted of the murder and is serving a life sentence. His current lawyer is planning to argue at a post-conviction hearing that Adnan's lawyer at the time of his trials provided ineffective legal counsel. Did the popularity of Serial mess with your mind? I really doubt you expected it to be that popular. It broke all records in podcasting. It's been written up all over. It's been like number one, I think, in Sweden and in England in terms of podcasting. Did that affect your own equilibrium?
Yes. It did. And this is just like a thing of my own personality, I think, is that it affected it negatively, mostly, largely. it was stressful, and I also tend to focus on the negative, as my colleagues probably kind of do. So I, you know, in the beginning, you know, when we were just like, well, you know, how's it going? And there started to be press about it. I was reading a lot, you know, and sort of Googling it several times a day, like, what's new? What are people saying? And that just started to be bad for me. So I kind of stopped, honestly. I really stopped.
Why was it bad?
Oh, because I'm thin-skinned, like, in a way that's just dumb, you know? I mean, you know, it's hard. It's doing this work, you would think that I should be able to get as good as I give. Somehow, it was a little, you know, it was just hard. You know, it's hard to, it's, I don't, you know, I take criticism personally. And so that was sometimes hard. I mean, in another level, it was really, I think, good for me as a reporter and good for the story. Insofar as it was just a constant reminder of how careful we needed to be. And it's not as if we weren't already being extraordinarily careful, you know, but it just was a sort of constant. To have that much scrutiny on the reporting that you're doing, especially when you're not done with it yet, was really, I mean, it really makes you work harder.
So do you think that your podcast might influence the outcome, or at least how much attention is paid to the case?
It shouldn't. You know, in a perfect world, it should not.
Let me challenge care. What you're saying for a second. Maybe it should, because you have information in the podcast that the defense attorney did not present. Now, that's not what's being challenged.
Right.
But still, there are certain irregularities that, I don't know, might influence somebody who's deciding on this.
Yeah, but that's the most I can say about it, too. Like, yeah, maybe might if they know about it. But truly, they really should only be considering what's in front of them on paper. You know what I mean? And,
right.
And like, nothing from my podcast is before the court. So, I mean, that might change. I know that Anand's attorney is still figuring out how to get the alibi issue back before the judge as well. And I think that is partly due to my reporting. But that gets you into the realm of kind of like, well, people, who knows what influences people? You know what I mean? And I don't want to speculate about, like, you know, who might be hearing what and what pressures they might be feeling. But technically, no. It was already before the court, before my podcast began, and it's still before the court.
Well, Sarah, I want to congratulate you on Serial, and I want to thank you so much for talking with us about it, and I look forward to season two. In the meantime, I hope you get some rest. Happy holidays, and Happy New Year.
Thank you so much. You too.
Sarah Koenig is the host and executive producer of the podcast Serial, which is a spinoff of This American Life. Season one ended last week, but it's a podcast, so it's available at your convenience at serialpodcast.org. Serial has gotten the funding to proceed with a second season.